So I want you to imagine something for a second. You wake up tomorrow, you pour your coffee, check the local news, and you see a headline that just completely makes your jaw drop.
Right, like hitting the municipal lottery, basically.
Exactly. Your town has just been handed billions of dollars. And I mean, we aren't talking about, you know, a slow 30-year infrastructure project where they fix like one bridge a year.
Oh no, those take forever.
Yeah, I mean, an emergency, a massive injection of government contracts straight into the local economy, like billions of dollars suddenly flowing into the factories and businesses right down the street from where you live.
It really is kind of the ultimate thought experiment for anyone who lives in a mid-sized city, you know?
Right.
We always hear about these massive spending bills in Washington, but, well, the money eventually has to land somewhere.
But what actually happens when it lands? Like, does that money trickle down to you? Does the whole town get richer? Or do the economic benefits just get, I don't know, trapped at the very top of the corporate ladder?
Yeah, that's the big question.
Welcome to today's deep dive. We are exploring the hidden mechanics of a sudden local economic boom. And you can actually see the visual setup behind us today. We have this massive map of the United States, and it's overlaid with these glowing economic data nodes.
It looks a bit like tracking flights on a radar.
It totally does. But what you're actually seeing is a movement of sudden wealth. And we are basing our conversation today on a brand new economic working paper that was just published on May 23, 2026.
Yeah, it's by Orhan Tarul from Boise University.
Right. And it's titled Defense Procurement and Local Wage Spillovers.
Which is just a remarkably thorough piece of research. I mean, it moves past the typical, you know, political arguments about government spending and focuses entirely on the raw data.
Just the numbers.
Exactly. It tracks how a dollar travels through community, literally down to the specific financial quarter and even down to the specific sector of the local economy.
Okay, let's unpack this. The mission of this deep dive is to figure out exactly what happens to a local paycheck when the government drops a massive fiscal shock into a regional economy.
And specifically here, the post-March 2022 emergency defense spending.
Right. And whether you're, you know, an investor trying to spot the next booming market, or maybe a local business owner figuring out how to price your services, or even just an employee wondering if you're finally going to get that raise, this affects you.
Oh, absolutely.
Because understanding how a local economic boom mechanically functions, I mean, that could entirely change your strategy.
Yeah. And to really grasp the value of this paper, you have to understand why this is usually so incredibly difficult to study.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Normally, if you want to see what happens when billions of dollars enter a town, you run into a massive roadblock called selection bias.
Meaning, like, the money doesn't just fall from the sky randomly.
Precisely. I mean, if a massive tech company decides to build a $5 billion headquarters in a specific city, they didn't just, you know, throw a dart at a map.
Right. They had a whole team analyze it.
Exactly. They chose that city because it already has a highly educated workforce, or maybe growing infrastructure, favorable tax laws. The city was, well, already on the upswing. When the economy booms a year later, economists can't easily tell what actually caused it. Did the new headquarters create the boom, or did the pre-existing boom attract the headquarters?
Oh, wow. Yeah. It's like the chicken or the egg.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It is nearly impossible to untangle in normal circumstances.
But the post-March 2022 defense spending solves that problem, doesn't it?
It does. It really does.
Because, just for context, this was when the U.S. Congress authorized tens of billions in emergency military supplementals, specifically for Ukraine and Israel.
Right.
And because this was a sudden emergency, the government didn't have the luxury of shopping around. Like, they couldn't spend 3 years analyzing which up-and-coming cities had the best tax incentives for a new weapons plant.
No time for that at all.
They had to send the money to historically predetermined defense industrial hubs. The factories that were already built, already tooled, and basically already operational.
And that right there is the key. It creates what economists call a natural experiment.
Which is like the holy grail for data nerds, right?
Pretty much, yeah. So the researcher here, Tarul, gathered a massive data set from the Bureau of Labor Statistics, specifically the QCEW data, which tracks employment and wages across 61 counties.
And what was the time frame on that?
From early 2021, right through the third quarter of 2025.
Okay, that's a huge window.
It is. And they identified 11 of these historical defense hubs. 8 of them received the emergency funding, and 3 did not.
So those 3 acted as like a baseline control group.
Exactly. And then they matched these hubs with 50 economically similar counties in the same regions just to make sure they were, comparing apples to apples.
So it's essentially like a massive twin study for American towns.
That's a great way to put it.
You find two towns with the exact same baseline, the same manufacturing footprint, the same median income. You drop a $1 billion defense contract onto one of them just because they happen to have a legacy factory from 40 years ago.
Right.
And you give the other town absolutely nothing. Then you watch the data to see how the two towns diverge. And I feel like the assumption here is pretty straightforward.
What do you mean?
Well, the money goes to the factory. The factory has to build thousands of new defense components by the end of the year. So the factory goes on an absolute hiring spree. They double the wages to get people on the assembly line. And the manufacturing workers basically make a fortune.
Right.
I mean, it is the most logical assumption you could make. But the data reveals something completely different.
Wait, really?
Yeah. There was absolutely no robust, statistically significant effect on manufacturing employment or wages.
Okay, I have to push back on that. How is that mechanically possible? If a local plant gets a $1 billion order, the money is literally being deposited into their accounts to build physical objects.
Right.
How do the workers building those objects not see a massive wage spike?
It comes down to how large-scale manufacturing actually operates in the modern era. When a legacy defense plant gets a sudden influx of orders, they rarely respond by immediately doubling their base hourly wage or permanently doubling their headcount.
So what do they do instead?
Well, they might utilize existing slack.
How's slack?
Yeah, meaning workers who were previously underutilized are now just working at full capacity. Or they might authorize heavy overtime, which, doesn't necessarily show up as a permanent increase in the base wage rate.
Ah, okay. That makes sense.
And also, the highly technical nature of the work means they simply can't find thousands of new qualified aerospace engineers overnight, so they just spread the timeline out.
So they just delay the delivery a bit.
Exactly. Some of the models in the paper even showed a slight negative tick in manufacturing employment that vanished when they had adjusted for outliers. But structurally, the data is very clear.
Which is what?
The factories themselves did not experience a massive, sustained wage boom that could be separated from normal economic noise.
Okay, here's where it gets really interesting. Because if the factory workers didn't capture the massive influx of wealth, the money had to go somewhere.
It did.
The actual measurable wage increase happened in the non-manufacturing sector. The local barista, the accountant, the graphic designer, like the IT specialist working at the hospital down the road from the defense plant, that is where the local economy actually lit up.
Yes, exactly. The data shows a distinct rise in non-manufacturing average weekly wages.
And what's the specific number on that?
It's an increase of about 0.34%.
Okay.
For the median treated county in this study, that translates to roughly $3.40 extra per week for a non-manufacturing worker.
Wait. $3.40? I look at that number and think, okay, I'm not exactly going to go finance a boat with an extra $3 a week. That sounds tiny.
On an individual level, sure, it is very modest. But if we connect this to the bigger picture, it represents a massive macroeconomic shift.
How so?
You have to multiply that $3.40 by tens of thousands of workers across an entire local service economy.
Oh, wow. Okay, yeah, that adds up.
This is the mechanism of local multipliers and demand spillovers. The defense contractor might not be doubling the salaries of their assembly line workers, but billions of dollars are still flowing into that corporate entity, right?
Right.
So the company is hiring local legal counsel, contracting local catering for events, maybe upgrading their IT infrastructure.
Oh, I see.
Furthermore, the executives and managers are spending their bonuses in the local economy. They're going out to dinner more often, hiring local landscapers, buying more premium coffees.
Right. So that sudden surge in secondary demand puts immense upward pressure on wages in the local services sector.
Precisely.
Okay. I follow the logic of the spillover. The money flows out of the factory and into the local coffee shops and accounting firms. But let's look at the human reality of this.
Okay. Let's do it.
If I'm a graphic designer at a small local marketing firm and my town gets a $1 billion defense contract, I mean, I don't just magically find an extra $3.40 in my paycheck.
I know you don't.
My boss doesn't just come to my desk and say, hey, the aerospace plant down the street got a government contract, so here's a fractional raise. Like, how does that money actually reach the worker's pocket?
That is the most crucial question this paper attempts to answer. And it actually required a completely different approach to the data.
Oh, what did they use?
The researcher pulled from the Census Quarterly Workforce Indicators, or QWI.
Okay.
This data doesn't just average out the town's total payroll, It tracks the actual flow of human beings. It looks at who is staying in their jobs, who is leaving, and who is newly hired.
And what does that reveal about the raises?
It reveals a stark divide. The researcher isolated what they call stable employees.
The incumbents, basically.
Exactly. The people who were already working at the marketing firm or the coffee shop or the local bank before the fiscal shock arrived. For those stable employees, the wage bump was virtually non-existent.
Wait, really? Nothing?
Practically nothing. The entire 0.34% wage increase in the non-manufacturing sector was driven almost exclusively by the earnings of new hires.
Let me make sure I'm hearing this right. A massive economic boom hits my town. Demand goes up. But the loyal employee who has been sitting at their desk for 3 years gets nothing.
Pretty much.
Instead, all the new money is being channeled to the person who just walked through the door.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, it's like a rising tide doesn't actually lift all boats. It just brings a completely different class of, you know, more expensive boats into the harbor.
That analogy captures the mechanics perfectly. The new hires in the secondary economy are entering at higher price points, which pulls the entire town's average wage up, even though the incumbent workers are seeing no change in their base pay.
But logically, why wouldn't the incumbent just quit? I mean, if I'm a barista making $15 an hour, and I know the cafe literally across the street is suddenly paying new hires $18 an hour because they're desperate to serve all these new corporate clients, I'm going to walk across the street and take the new job.
You would think so.
Wouldn't that force my current boss to raise my wages to keep me?
You are hitting on a core concept called labor market friction.
Friction. Okay.
In pure economic theory, yes, everyone would seamlessly shift to the highest paying job instantly. But in reality, changing jobs carries a massive psychological and logistical cost.
Like what?
Well, you might like your current manager. You might have a schedule that perfectly accommodates your childcare needs. Or you might have seniority or accumulated benefits.
Right. PTO, health insurance, that kind of thing.
Exactly. Bosses understand this wage stickiness. They know that most people will not quit over a marginal difference in pay. So a local business owner will gladly pay a premium to secure a new hire in a tight, booming labor market. But they will avoid giving a proactive raise to their existing staff unless they are absolutely forced to.
Wow. That's a little bleak, but it makes sense.
Yeah. Now, the paper is rigorously transparent about its limitations here. Because the data is aggregated at the sector level within each county, we cannot definitively see the exact job titles.
So there could be other factors pushing the new hire average up.
Exactly. It's possible the new hires are simply working more hours. Or there could be a shift in the occupation mix.
Like what?
For example, the local logistics company might not be hiring more entry-level drivers. They might be hiring a highly paid senior analytics director to handle all the new regional demand.
Oh, I see. So one really high salary pulls the new hire average way up.
Right. But regardless of the specific mix, the near absolute flatness of the stable employee earnings heavily points to the conclusion that local businesses do not respond to an economic boom by granting widespread raises to their existing workforce.
It makes complete, somewhat brutal sense from a business management perspective. You pay the market rate to get a necessary body in the door,
right,
but you keep your existing payroll as flat as humanly possible.
Yeah, that's business.
But playing devil's advocate here, we are talking about data from 2022 to 2025.
Right.
The economy was doing incredibly strange things bouncing back from the pandemic. We had weird inflation, supply chain bottlenecks, massive shifts in consumer behavior.
Very true.
How do we know this tiny 0.34% wage bump was actually caused by the defense contracts and not just some, you know, localized post-pandemic weirdness?
This is where the paper's methodology becomes incredibly strict. The author essentially tried to break their own findings by running the data through a series of extreme stress tests.
Oh, I love economic CSI. What did they do?
They started with a placebo test. They took their exact statistical model and applied it to data from 2017 to 2019.
Okay, before the pandemic.
Right. And they told the model to pretend that the massive defense shock actually happened in the middle of 2018.
Oh, I get it. If the model shows a wage bump in 2018, then, you know, the towns just naturally fluctuate, and the 2022 finding is probably just a coincidence.
Exactly.
Okay.
But the result of the 2018 placebo test was zero. There was no effect.
Wow.
That strongly suggests the wage spillover they found in 2022 was uniquely tied to that specific influx of defense spending.
Okay, I want to look closely at the map behind you again, because when you dig into the geographical data of this study, one thing immediately jumps out. There's a dot in Nevada that is practically blinding.
Yes. Churchill County.
Churchill County. When the author measured how intensely a county was affected by the influx of money, they compared the dollar amount of the contracts to the size of the local private workforce. The median intensity score for a treated county was 5.6. Churchill County had a score of 89.4.
Yeah, it's wild. Churchill County is home to the Naval Air Weapons Station Fallon. Because of its relatively small baseline economy, an influx of emergency defense spending represents an astronomical per capita injection of wealth.
Which seems like a massive problem for the study.
Why do you say that?
If I'm trying to figure out what happens to the average American town, and one of my data points is a town experiencing a literal gold rush, that one crazy outlier is going to skew the entire national average. It's going to make it look like everyone is getting a wage bump when really it's just, you know, Nevada.
That is a very valid concern, which is exactly why the researcher addressed it directly. To ensure Churchill County wasn't artificially driving the results, they mathematically capped the intensity of the spending at the 95th percentile.
Okay, what does that do?
It's a process called Windsorization. Essentially, they blunted the impact of the most extreme outliers to see if the underlying trend held true for the typical county.
And it survived the test.
It did. The non-manufacturing wage spillover remained perfectly robust.
That's amazing.
But the author went even further to rule out invisible variables. In observational economics, you always worry about unobserved background trends. Like, what if something else was happening in these specific regions between 2021 and 2025 that the data couldn't quite capture?
Like a general regional boom that had literally nothing to do with defense spending.
Right. To test for that, they used advanced statistical bounding techniques. We won't get lost in the mathematical formulas.
Thank you for that.
But they basically asked the model, what is the worst case scenario? They used the Rambican-Roth bounds, and they calculated that even if there was an invisible underlying trend working against their hypothesis, a trend half as strong as the most volatile fluctuations seen before the shock, so a breakdown value of 0.50 the wage spillover, still holds true.
Wow, okay.
It proves the result isn't fragile. And to be absolutely certain, they tested entirely different sectors. They looked at wages in the local construction industry and the local education sector.
Ah, I see. Because if it was just a general invisible regional boom, construction workers and teachers should have seen a wage spike too.
Exactly. But they didn't. There was no statistically significant effect in those sectors whatsoever.
So it was laser targeted.
Exactly. The wage bump was highly specific to the non-manufacturing services that directly absorb secondary corporate and executive demand. What's fascinating here is that the true contribution of this paper isn't just, you know, proving that spillovers exist or calculating a $3.40 weekly average.
Right. It's bigger than that.
The real triumph is proving how a local economy mechanically adjusts to a sudden influx of wealth. It doesn't adjust through a wave of benevolent, across-the-board raises for everyone who lives there. It adjusts through the cold, mechanical reality of hiring composition.
So, what does this all mean? We started this deep dive by asking you to imagine your town waking up to billions of dollars in government contracts. Based on this rigorously tested data, we now have a remarkably clear picture of your reality.
We really do.
If you live in a town that just landed a massive fiscal windfall, do not sit at your desk and wait for your boss to hand you a share of the profits.
It's just not going to happen.
The economic spillover is real. The local demand will undeniably go up, but that money heavily favors the new hires entering the workforce. The local economy adapts by changing who gets hired and at what starting rate, not by rewarding the people who stay put.
This raises an important question about how we actually view municipal growth. We often celebrate local investment as a universal victory for the community. And, you know, while the money does flow into the local ecosystem, this data forces us to acknowledge that the flow is highly directional.
Yeah.
It channels into very specific, newly formed pathways, often bypassing the established workforce entirely.
Which leaves us with a lingering and honestly pretty provocative thought to chew on.
Oh.
We just established that local economic booms practically ignore loyal, stable incumbents.
Yeah.
And instead channel the wage growth to new hires. If you are a local business owner or a manager, what does that dynamic do to your company's morale?
Oh, that's a great point.
Right. Could a massive local government investment actually end up poisoning the culture in the secondary economy? Like, imagine being that loyal employee. You've been at the company for 5 years. You are watching the cost of a sandwich go up at the deli across the street because your town is booming, but your paycheck hasn't changed a bit.
That would be incredibly frustrating.
Meanwhile, you watch the new guy who was hired literally yesterday reap the actual wage benefits of that exact same boom? Does a rising economic tide actually create resentment among the boats that were already sitting in the harbor?
It is a profound behavioral and managerial challenge. And, I mean, thanks to this data, it's one we can clearly see forming on the horizon whenever sudden wealth enters a community.
Just something to keep in mind the next time you see a headline about a massive contract landing in your backyard. Thank you for joining us on this deep dive into the hidden mechanics of our local economies. Keep questioning the numbers behind the news, and we'll catch you next time.